The Way Out Podcast, episode 108. Emotional sobriety is about tolerating what you are feeling. It is about staying sober no matter what you are feeling. It means that you don't have to blame yourself or your program because life can be challenging. It means you don't necessarily need to do something to make the feeling go away. Let me just repeat that. It means you don't have to do something in order to make the feeling go away. Let me repeat that one more time.
Right.
It means that you do not have to do something in order to make the feeling go away. In
and
other words...
And that's not just talking about chemicals. That's talking about acting impulsively based on a feeling, which is... Feelings are bullshit. You know? Feelings aren't facts.
100%.
Yeah.
Totally. 100%.
Boom!
That is the deal. I don't have to act the way I feel.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us on this week's installment of The Way Out, sharing stories from people just like you who have recovered from alcoholism and other addictions. The Way Out does not speak on behalf of, nor are we affiliated with any 12-step organization. Our purpose is to share with you, one episode at a time, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now.
The Way Out Podcast is sponsored by Transitions Daily. Would you like to join a free, anonymous, online group that offers a daily topic email with popular recovery resources accompanied by a secret Facebook group for discussion? Go to dailyaaemails.com for more information about Transitions Daily. Don't forget to share dailyaaemails.com with friends, in meetings, and with sponsees in recovery. Make sure to check out the official website of The Way Out Podcast at www.wayoutcast.com. There you will find links to our latest episodes on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Radio FM. You can also follow The Way Out Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Help us get the message out that lifelong recovery from alcoholism and addiction is possible by giving us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform.
Have a question or comment about an upcoming or previous show? Call us right now. Area code 218-382-1960. Call us anytime, day or night, and leave us a message on whatever is on your mind. Maybe it's a previous episode topic or something that you're struggling with in your own recovery. Call us at 218-382-1960 and leave The Way Out Podcast hosts a message and we could feature it on our next episode. That's 218-382-1960. Help us recover out loud.
Last but certainly not least, make sure to check out altrecoveryrigs.com for stunning rings made from your very own recovery coin. That's altrecoveryrigs.com.
The Way Out Podcast is on right now. Along with Jason and guest co-host Troy, I'm Charlie, and this week we bring you an engaging and enlightening discussion on what Bill W. of Alcoholics Anonymous dubbed the next frontier of AA. Emotional sobriety. Emotional sobriety strikes at the very core of what it means to be an addict and alcoholic, and what separates simply being sober from being in recovery. We reveal to you what emotional sobriety is, and what the reverse state is, emotional inebriety. You'll learn how to identify if you have emotional sobriety, and how to tell if you don't. Perhaps most helpful, we'll discuss how to become emotionally sober and why it's so important in recovery. Plus, we take calls from The Way Out Podcast listeners. Listen up, Troy, Jason.
Hey,
what up?
We're on The Way Out Podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got a recovery power topic coming very soon. But before we do that, I want, Troy, I want you to introduce yourself to The Way Out Podcast audience. Tell us who you are, your sobriety date, and anything else you'd like to share about your recovery.
Yeah, who are you?
Hey, hey, Way Outers. my name is Troy. I have 578 days of sobriety.
That is amazing.
Yes.
That is amazing. Yeah!
I noticed it on my Pink Cloud app here. But anyhow, I do have a home group. It's at a little place I like to call Hazel Inn. It's Wednesday nights in Center City. In all actuality, I have over 8 years of sobriety from alcohol. But that's a whole nother topic, but or that's actually the same topic, but anyhow, and that's about the size of it. It's my first time ever doing a podcast.
We're super glad to have you on. Super glad.
Popping that podcast cherry.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
He's also my sponsee brother.
So there is a connection. Jason, we have a list of folks that will be in the Way Out Podcast Studios.
Guest co-hosts.
Yeah, guest co-hosts. So that'll be cool. So I'm really excited to have Troy, you here, and we're going to have a bunch of other guest co-hosts that are really going to add to the flavor of the podcast. So I'm excited about that. Today's topic, this episode's topic, is emotional sobriety. Mm. So we're going to talk about emotional sobriety, and we're going to start with a quiz.
Oh, boom, boom, boom. I didn't know there was going to be a test.
That's correct. An emotional sobriety quiz. So I'm going
I'm so screwed.
So I'm going to ask a series of questions. And Troy, Jason, you can feel free to answer out loud or not. Totally your option. As you're listening along, feel free to answer in your own head. Yes or no to these questions. If you answer yes to any of these questions, we'll talk about that. Answer. Oh, jeez. Oh. Now, that means we're ready for the test.
Whatever.
That was a notification, yeah. Jason, mm-hmm. Troy, that we were ready for the test. So we're right on time.
Right on. Testing.
Answer these questions with either a yes or a no. Do you accept criticism well?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. And I think that's probably true. Are you usually hurt or angered by criticism? Do others think more highly of you than you do of yourself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have a difficult time accepting compliments?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you depend on others to feel good about yourself?
Oh, God.
No.
Do what people say unduly influence feelings or beliefs you have about yourself?
No.
Do you often do a good job and know it and don't feel good about it?
No.
Do you often put yourself down?
Sometimes.
Looking at your life honestly, do you treat yourself well?
I try. Yes.
I'm getting there.
Do you treat others better than you treat yourself?
Yes.
I try.
Do you often feel like a loser, even though you know you are a good person?
No.
No.
Not anymore.
Answering yes to one or more of these questions, there is a degree of emotional inebriety present. Now, as I was going along in that quiz, I could not answer no to every one of them. There were some yeses in there for me.
For sure.
You know?
And I think that speaks to, you know, this is a process. Recovery is a lifelong process. We're never going to be perfect. And that's it.
So I think there's a suggestion that says that, you know, we may not be 100% emotionally sober at all times, but we can strive to become more emotionally sober as we progress in our recovery.
Right.
So let's talk about what I think instructive in a discussion about emotional sobriety and to help define emotional sobriety. Let's talk about what emotional inebriety looks like, or emotional unsoberness. That's the same thing. Emotional inebriety, emotional unsoberness.
I'm inebriated by my feelings.
Bingo.
And that's funny you say that because that's a lot about what that is. So Tom Brady Jr., who has an amazing talk on emotional sobriety. So if you, it's on this podcast. I released it in a two-part episode. So look on the history of this podcast and you absolutely will find Tom Brady Jr.'s talk on emotional sobriety and it will blow your mind.
Yeah.
It will absolutely blow your mind. The man does a profound job defining what emotional inebriety is, what it feels like, what the signs and symptoms are, and then what emotional sobriety looks like, what the signs and symptoms are of that, right? So if you want to get a really good handle on that, absolutely check that out. So Tom Brady Jr. defines emotional inebriety when what I believe and feel about myself are not consistent with the facts. I depend on the input of others to determine who I am and what I feel. I also depend on others to tell me how to feel about me. Jason, when you think about that, when you hear that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't think that it would be something that I can relate to, honestly. But that's just me. You know, I think my whether or not I could keep my supply plentiful in my using, or, you know, whether it was a chemical or, you know, a woman that, you know, whatever it might be, just whatever I was trying to fill that hole with, right? Like, but I mean, I always kind of have been a loner type. Like, I'm like a social butterfly, but I don't trust a lot of people, so I've always had a hard time. So, I mean, for me to put people in that high of a regard where I would honestly give a shit what they think about me wasn't probably going to happen, but that's just me.
There's some other things that we can talk about when it comes to emotional inebriety. Over-reliance on others to tell you what and who you are as a person. Persistent feelings of inadequacy. These are signs of emotional inebriety.
Right.
Fixating on the feelings of a particular event, often negative. Extreme emotional highs and lows.
See, all that, hell yeah, nail on the head.
Emotional hangovers.
Well, it, you know, if you don't have a, like a, you know, I have a certain thing that I do every morning, that's get right with the Lord. And, you know, I have to, you know, recall the fact that I am an alcoholic. And if I set myself up right for the day, then I find that, you know, all those things that other people think or say are less, you know, they strike me less if I'm in a good place.
And that speaks to the spiritual centeredness. And if I get my spirituality right, then the world around me can be chaotic. It can be harmful, hurtful. And I can stay on the proverbial ball.
Right. Yeah. It's. I think the best way to describe it is being centered. You know, if I'm centered, or some people say you're on the beam or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're feeling that way, if you start yourself out that way on a daily basis, your life or my life tends to go a lot better. And, you know, it's easily achieved.
So let's talk about a couple of other things that might speak to emotional inebriety. If you're out there listening and you want to know if you've got a degree of emotional inebriety, lack of ability to regulate your mood. Lack of ability to regulate behavior, not being able to gain perspective on feelings when they are extreme, lack of an ability to regulate self-medicating use of substances or behaviors, inability to live in the present, preoccupied with past unresolved wounds, lack of an ability to regulate your activity level, chronically over or underactive. Inability to have deeply feeling intimate relationships, and a lack of resilience or the lack of an ability to roll with the punches.
too rigid, too inflexible, right?
Right.
And I think if I'm being honest, I can relate to all of those.
Absolutely.
And that emotional inebriety plagued me all my life.
Mm-hmm.
Before I remember these kinds of unmanageable feelings before I ever got drunk or high.
Right? Oh, yeah.
You know, those existed within me, I think, really from the beginning.
Well,
as long
honestly,
as I can remember.
For me, the using was my solution to this exact thing, you know, initially.
So this emotional unsoberness really strikes at the core of what it means, at least for me, to be an addict and an alcoholic. Because yeah. This is much of the root of my problem. Is this emotional inebriety, right? Yep. Ego and self-centeredness and some other fear. Those are all things that were at the root of what it meant to be an addict and an alcoholic.
Oh, yeah.
But emotional inebriety or unsoberness definitely is right there at the very core of what that meant. So when we talk about that, I think it's important to understand that if I don't work on my emotional sobriety, that is a risk for me. Because I know that if I become too emotionally unsober, there's a big R word hanging in the balance for me. Right? Relapse.
Big R word.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going, what?
What is that?
Yeah. What? R word? Resentment? No. Wait, let me guess. Wait. Just kidding.
So then let's talk about what... So now that we have an idea and understanding of what emotional inebriety is, let's talk about... Let's get some working definitions of what emotional sobriety looks like.
Sounds good.
Tom Brady Jr. says, when I know what to be true about myself and what I believe and feel are coinciding. In other words, the facts match my feelings and beliefs. Example, I say that my partner is a valuable person in my life, and my actions prove this to be true. I think that makes sense.
Or you could even take that a step further and be like, your actual feelings within yourself match what you said. Because maybe you want people to think that you know, but you're really carrying resentments about some stuff or whatever it might be, you know.
Or I feel like a total piece of shit.
It's just you got to
But I don't show that to you.
You got to have, yeah, integrity is what they call it, you know, where your insides match your outsides.
To thine own self be true.
Bingo. Absolutely. What people say affect me, but does not determine what I believe and feel about myself, right? And that's all Tom Brady Jr.'s synopsis. But there's some other ways to describe emotional sobriety. Emotional sobriety signifies an ability to keep a healthy balance of your emotions. It means that you've accepted the reality as it is today, at this moment, not how you wish it could be. It means you are learning the proper tools to deal with your emotions in a healthy way and using these tools as needed.
Yep.
Emotional sobriety simply is about being able to feel your feelings in a healthy way. Emotional sobriety is about tolerating what you are feeling. It is about staying sober no matter what you are feeling. It means that you don't have to blame yourself or your program because life can be challenging. It means you don't necessarily need to do something to make the feeling go away. Let me just repeat that. It means you don't have to do something in order to make the feeling go away. Let me repeat that one more time.
Right.
It means that you do not have to do something in order to make the feeling go away. In other words.
And that's not just talking about chemicals. That's talking about acting impulsively based on a feeling, which is feelings are bullshit. You know, feelings aren't facts.
100%.
Yeah.
Totally. 100%.
Boom!
That is the deal. I don't have to act the way I feel.
Yeah.
When agitated, we pause.
Boom.
Wow.
The God pause. What a concept. Right? And that ultimately is the biggest difference in my recovery today, and I still struggle with it, right? I still have challenges around, I feel something, which means I've got an impulse.
Yeah.
Okay? That is a behavior pattern that is tremendously difficult to break.
Agreed.
I feel something, I now have an impulse to distract me from that feeling. Maybe it's a candy bar. Okay? Maybe it's sex. Maybe it's drugs, alcohol. Maybe it is a what? It doesn't matter what the is. If I do something to distract me from an unpleasant emotion, I'm perpetuating my emotional inebriety.
Yeah. Totally.
And that's at the core of what it means for me to be in recovery.
You know, I was putting a lot of thought into this week, and I ended up, just because I'd wanted to effectively articulate everything, because there was kind of a lot of facets to it, I kind of came up with my own working definition.
Hit us.
Okay, ready? All right. All right, so when I think of emotional sobriety, there's a couple things that come to mind. First of all, the chemicals that I used, well, they fucked me up. And when I first started recovery, my emotions were fucking me up too. They were too much. You may have heard the phrase, the best part about recovery is getting your feelings back, but the worst part about recovery is getting your feelings back.
Word.
I didn't know how to cope with life or my feelings. It was super intense. And I always had to call my sponsor or somebody for advice because I never knew what to do. My emotions drove me crazy. So to me, emotional sobriety means that my feelings don't affect me that way anymore. Similarly, there was aspects of my life that may have been causing said emotions, people, places, and things that I needed to let go of. So another aspect of emotional sobriety was putting down toxic things, just like I had to put down my drugs. When we learn our worth, we stop giving people discounts. So in short, to me, emotional sobriety is twofold. It's cutting out toxicity from one's life or environment and getting good enough at emotional self-regulation where nothing is going to send you off the deep end.
You're on.
You're on fire!
Boom!
On fire!
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
It could be said then, emotional sobriety is as much about learning to fully experience emotions as it is about not letting those emotions control your life, your relationships, or your addiction.
Yeah. Because how many times does a feeling make it seemingly impossible for you to let go of something or someone that's toxic to you? And then when you start working the steps and you start to gain a new perspective, all of a sudden it's plain as day how bad they are for you. And you still let these feelings get in the way of you doing the what you need to do for you, which is getting, you know, moving past it. And that, you know what? A big thing that helped me in the beginning was when they told me, and I've said this before on the show, I think, is that, you know, letting go of somebody or something does not mean that you don't love them. It just means you love them from a distance until you get better, you know?
Absolutely. And I would say that tying into emotions threatening to be unmanageable and the fear that strikes me when there is an event, an experience, a thought, a memory that's emotionally charged. I'm afraid of it by default. And Troy, as you said, I have to let my higher power in. And I have to let the God of my understanding operate within me in order to walk through whatever emotions those are and experience that emotion and dare to experience that emotion without doing something to medicate me through it, to distract me through it, and without becoming emotionally unsober, in that I used to wallow in those emotions. I used to sit in those emotions for far too long. I used to artificially extend those emotions, all sorts of really, really unhealthy behaviors, which I don't do today, which I know today I'm more emotionally sober than I was yesterday, and I hope tomorrow that's the case too.
Right.
And I keep identifying ways that I use people, places, and things in order to distract me from my emotions. And when I eliminate those things is when I grow.
Well, I also, to Jason's point, I agree that it's good. Like he said, he called his sponsor. You can do positive things too. I don't necessarily think that you have to meet everything head on. That taking a pause or doing something positive, that's a good way to deal with it as well.
So let's talk about that. We can use recovery tools in order to help us deal with emotions that are too intense. And it's funny you say that, because I had an experience at work that was unlike I had had in a very, very long time. And it was so negative, and it was so overwhelming, and I was so angry, I didn't know what to do. I have not been that angry in a very, very, very long time.
Fit to be tied?
Absolutely. And I'm on my way home, and I call my sponsor, because I didn't know what else to do. And I'm so angry, I'm actually crying. And I walk through that with him. And it's the first time in a very long time, and I mean a very long time, where a case of the fuck-its came in. Briefly, but
yeah,
they did.
Like, yeah, I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Because these emotions were so powerful. And I knew I couldn't manage them on my own. I just knew it. If I sat in that by myself, that would have been a recipe for disaster. So Troy, very, very head on and smart the way you say, we can use our tools, we can reach out, we can ask for help, and that's what I did.
Yep.
And by the time I got done, a lot of the power had been removed out of that event. And I got home and I was not at risk.
Right.
The emotions weren't over, and it took really a few days to work through it all, but I was not at risk anymore. And I was able to share that same thing at a meeting, and more power got taken away. But I had to be vulnerable. I had to be honest. It's.
I love that. I love that. The power of meetings.
So
it's amazing.
So, Jason, tell me, you know, what tools do you use when you are faced with emotions that threaten to become unmanageable?
Well, you know, to Troy's point, I definitely pause. I give it some time for good reflection, because a lot of times, you know, all I know is that if I respond while the feeling is intense, it's probably going to be wrong what I do with it. So, and a lot of times I need that reflection time just to be able to articulate what the hell was going on in the first place, because it's confusing. Like it can feel confusing to me when in the moment. And like a good example of that is this week as well. I was in Stephen ministry training on Thursday night, last Thursday here, and it was all about listening. And listening with a purpose, like listening for content, listening for feelings, and then listening for spiritual concerns. And I don't know what it was about this session, but something struck a nerve with me and I was feeling some type of way and I really couldn't put my finger on it at first. But after some reflection, so I mean, I got like real quiet for a little bit of the class, like, and I was kind of running in my mind. So I wasn't, I was trying to listen to what other people were saying for a good 15 minutes of the class and I couldn't, focus that good because of what was going on in my head. And what it really boiled down to, I think, was it was feelings of inadequacy or self-doubt. Like, can I do this? You know, all of those kind of questions. Am I qualified to do this? It was tough. It was tough. But you know what? At the end, it was like a guy in the class. Because this is what I would never have done before, right? Is once I could articulate kind of what was going on, I talked about it. I blasted myself in front of the whole group. A couple guys talked to me after the class. And one of them was like, oh, is my critique too strong on like when I was, we did these exercises and when it was my turn to like be the listener, you know? And I don't know, man, it was weird, but it was cool. Cause this one guy's like, God doesn't equip, or he says he doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called. And I was like, right on. So like that tells me, right, like that this is a process and I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And there's a reason that I'm in training, right, to do this, because I need training. I'm not equipped at this point to do it. And that's why I'm in the training. So I think boils down to me putting unrealistic expectations on myself. That's perfectionism rearing its ugly head. It's all of that. And it was tough though. And it was a really intense feeling. I didn't like it at all. And it really, you know, yeah, I totally felt that same thing you said, like that fuck it's come in. I wanted to, like, for a split second, like I wanted to quit. I wanted to like throw my book down on the ground and be like, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Is that healthy? No. What's healthy, even though it's hard, is admitting what's going on in your head and your heart, you know, because they can't see that. They couldn't tell that I was going through all these crazy emotions at all.
So you were honest with it. You were vulnerable enough to be able to share where you were at, honestly.
Yeah, and it was hard as hell, but I was so glad I did it because I didn't leave there feeling that way anymore, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk about some things that would be indicators that you've got a degree of emotional sobriety in your life, right? Because I think most of us got both, right? You know, I don't know that there's a whole lot of people that are walking around completely emotionally sober. although when I was actively using and drinking, I was probably one of those textbook definitions of emotional inebriety.
Oh, yeah.
But the ability to regulate negative feelings, the ability to live in the present, the ability to say no to temptation. That's a big one.
Yeah.
The ability to go with the flow. The ability to form deep bonds. Okay? The ability to maintain a perspective on life circumstances. The ability to regulate activity levels. The ability to regulate behavior, right? So becoming emotionally sober is really connected with the idea that we don't have to act the way we feel.
love it.
Accepting and loving yourself.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Let's talk about that. Okay? Because I really believe that that's a marker in, based on much of the recovery literature that I've consumed in preparation for this, accepting, self-acceptance and self-love is inextricably connected with emotional sobriety. Do we treat ourselves like we would treat somebody that we loved?
Well, I'm
Troy.
Well, I'm not Stuart Smalls. But I think I'm that's the right
Stuart Smalley.
It is, yeah, Smalley. Stuart Smalley.
And damn it, I'm worth it.
Good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
That's right, yeah.
But, you know, I believe it has, for me at least, it has a lot to do with mind, body, and spirit. So if I'm in a good emotional state, I'm a proponent of going to the gym and working out. I'm a proponent of, you know, the spiritual aspect as well. When I address all those, the three things, the three legs of a stool, if you would, you know, I'm better equipped.
Yeah, I think for me, and I think you're right, if I am, so mind, body, and spirit are connected in a way, and if one is short, the others suffer. Hmm. If I'm spiritually unhealthy, then that is absolutely going to affect my mind and my body. And that's true for any of the other three, right?
Yeah, for me, I find that.
But this self-acceptance and this ability to have self-love, okay, is the Shangri-La for me.
Yeah.
And I'm working on it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I'm the same. I'm working on it.
You know?
I've done a lot. I've done a lot to this point. This is why I've been single for so long. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like just starting to get to the point where like I'm comfortable in my own skin, and I'm not every time something goes wrong spewing out like negative things and curse words about myself at myself when nobody's there, you know, like I'm learning.
And this idea, and Tom Brady Jr. talks about that a lot. You know, you stub your toe on the edge of the bed, and the first thing that comes out of your mouth is, "You dumb son of a bitch."
Yeah. Dude, no, that's real.
Know, would you say that to
you? You don't do that, Troy?
No, you know, I will admit, though, that, you know, my generally speaking, my first reaction is had historically been a negative one, but you can't, what I tend to do is, you know, I recognize it, and then, I think to myself, what's the positive thing, you know, to think or whatever, and, you know, it's that old adage of, you know, you act your way into right thinking.
Absolutely.
Huh.
And right.
Very good.
And you are right about that, and that's how we do everything in recovery. At least that's how I've done everything in recovery, is that I act my way into right thinking rather than think my way into right living.
I truly believe that those steps, right, like working the steps and that design for clearing up the wreckage of your past and moving forward is a recipe for...
It's a design for living.
It's a recipe for... being able to put down those negative things that you feel about yourself, and you know, and then the service work aspect is where we learn to find our value, and I mean that's to me been huge. Also, therapy, getting on some meds that work right with my depression, you know, doing a parenting class or doing an anger management class, or like I befriended some people in my recovery, like some pastors, for instance, and then who have helped me really find comfort and my worth. And then to this one therapist who does shadow work and what's the other? Some kind of like relationship therapy too, that she's got some profound stuff. Like she helped me like name my inner child and like... Mm. And come to, yeah, and like learn to get like comfortable with him and be able to sit there. And I like named it JJ. And it's like what people used to call me when I was a kid, man. And like when I got molested and when I got left alone with my brother and sister and I had to raise them and all these things, like I carried with me my whole life. And I just felt a lot of bitterness and anger for the world and for God and for everything over that stuff. And it's like, now it's like I realized that, you know, I can like get in there with him and just be like, hey, you know, and sit down in that dark place, right? That hidden dark place in me. And I found out that it's just part of me. It's part of who I am. And it's not this like big, never ending, scary, dangerous, like place when you're in that dark place. It's just a part of me. It's just this little cubby hole where he's kind of hiding out. And I try to bring him out into the light now. And this stuff works. It's weird.
One of the things that you met, two things that you mentioned, Jason, that I want to touch on that I think are really instructive. Number one, the idea that you engaged on a journey in therapy.
Oh, yeah.
That allowed you to move through childhood trauma.
And just being open to different avenues of doing so, you know?
Absolutely.
Because maybe one works for me.
They're going to haunt you.
One works for me, maybe doesn't work for you, you know?
Yes, I would agree with that. In identifying a therapist that you can be open, honest, and vulnerable with so that you can do that important work. And I think, especially for men, I think that can be, there can be stigma around that. And let me break that. Let me smash the hell out of that right now. I want to smash the stigma around therapy for men and women.
For men and women, because I know plenty of women that should be doing something that they're...
And there's stigma around it. Yeah. And let me tell you, it was monumental in my recovery. Monumental to move through the trauma that I experienced in my childhood.
Have to.
That's one of the things that, you know, I know Jason from the rooms, and then we also share a sponsor. I have many sponsors, actually. I collect them.
nice. As long as you don't shop for the right answer among them, I think you're in good shape.
Maybe that's what he's doing. I don't know.
I too was a child of, I was abused early on. And, you know, that greatly affected me. And I never have actually talked about it before.
Wow.
Interestingly, huh? And that's one of the things that is really did drew me to Jason, because he has got the ability to discuss that stuff, and it's I think it's paramount. You know, when I initially went through the steps, I did that. You know, I did that where I prayed for the person. They say that, you know, do it for what is it like?
As long as it takes.
But, you know, the standard is 2 weeks. But, yeah, exactly. As long as it takes.
Until you actually mean it. Until you really do want the best for them.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I can't safely say that. I get it. Forgiveness is a tricky nut. But,
it sure is. But, you know, it's true what they say. You know, that's for you. It's not for them. And it's the only way that you can move forward.
And so, Troy, maybe you've identified an opportunity in your own recovery, maybe to embark on some exploration around therapy that could help you move through some of that stuff. Because I can tell you unequivocally,
I need to hear this.
The sexual abuse that I suffered when I was a child, and the death of my mother, and those two things took an extraordinary toll on my ability to regulate and manage myself, not just my emotions, myself. Mm-hmm. And engaging with a therapist, mine was in connection with my treatment. And so I was able to receive addiction and alcoholism treatment right alongside
the dual diagnosis.
Yep. And I also got to speak to Charlie when he was 10, 11. And she asked me something very important. And she said, you know, in these moments that are extremely emotionally charged, that haunt you, that come to you when it's quiet, when there's nobody around, is your opportunity to say what you need to say. And she said, what would you have said if it was your son in that same situation? I want you to tell 10-year-old Charlie.
Right.
What you would tell your son in that situation.
Yeah.
And it was transformative.
It's powerful, man.
It was trans-fucking-formative.
This shit. It's crazy that, you know, you think you can't get past some of these stuff, that, you know, some of these things. They're like your kryptonite, you know, and it's not true. You can move past it. It just takes some work, some intensive work. And, you know, it's making a commitment to that, because it's not going to feel comfortable to do it, but, it gets better, right? Like, your first session is going to be a lot harder than your fifth session. And it doesn't really take too long. If you keep showing up, you know, if you're making that intentional effort. Yeah.
100%. So I would say, as we transition to what it looks like in being emotionally sober, right, that we break the old connection between emotion and impulse.
Emotion and behavior, yeah. You mean, kind of deal.
Yep. Impulsive behavior.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And when we can break that connection and introduce the pause.
Yeah. Or tools, you know.
Or calling a sponsor or somebody in recovery.
Actually, you just reminded me of something that somebody told me really early on in my recovery, which was like, you look at all these different aspects of recovery, right? Like reading your big book might be one. Your calling your sponsor might be one. You're hitting your meetings regularly might be one, and so on and so forth, right? Showing up to your service commitments, whatever. They're all like a barrier to between you and a relapse, right?
Right.
And that's, you just reminded me of that when you were saying, you know, breaking that connection and then putting things in there to block you from, yeah. So that's kind of cool. I didn't even think of that before.
Absolutely. It is. And they're so connected. They're so connected. So, gentlemen, we've got some phone calls.
Oh, yeah. Yay! Good, because I've been like getting really teary-eyed. I appreciate you sharing, Troy. Even, you know, you don't have to get into specifics. I know how hard it is, even to utter those words that you uttered.
That was huge
in the beginning when you haven't discussed that stuff. I didn't get to the place where I could talk about my shit right away, and it wasn't easy. So I applaud you for that, man. And I hope that you take that, you know, that feeling that you got, and that, you know, that need, you recognized it, right? So like, I hope you take that and you run with that, you know, do something about it, man. You deserve it. You deserve it.
Absolutely. It really takes that power away. So I encourage you to.
It was almost as if I needed to be here tonight.
I'm not surprised.
Like a God thing or something.
Divine intervention. Or a divine appointment. Yes. That's what it is. Sorry.
All right, here we go. We got Peter.
Oh.
Hi, this is Peter calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota, USA.
Hey, Peter.
Peter.
And I am calling in regards to the topic of emotional sobriety. It's a topic that I think is important. I guess, my take on emotional sobriety is that it's a byproduct, for me, of spiritual connection. So basically, if I'm doing things I need to do to keep in touch with my higher power, keep that connection going, I'm given the gifts of mental sobriety, emotional sobriety, physical sobriety. All those things are collateral gains from my spiritual connection. So that's my take. My program is one that's 12-step based. And I
have a strong spiritual
connection, and that's what keeps me recovered. So that is my take on emotional recovery, sobriety.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter.
Peter, thank you. And Peter's going to be coming to a Way Out podcast studio near you.
Yeah, yeah.
To guest host. So that'll be fun. So thank you, Peter, for calling in. And I
got something to say about that. And just in regards, this is in regards to my higher power. So take it or leave it. It's up to you.
That's everything on this podcast. But in the take what you leave, right, and leave the rest.
But in my faith, being a Christ follower, there's this thing they call the process of sanctification. So like, I gave my will and my life over to Jesus Christ, and I want Him to lead my life. He starts His good work in me, and that means that I'm changing on His timeline, not on mine. And I can push and I can pull, and sometimes I get irritated with myself because I'm far from perfect, believe me. But he's doing His work. The idea there is that, yeah, kind of what to Peter's point is that, you know, if you're connected and you're trying to be obedient, that everything else in your life kind of works itself out. And I used to relate that same thing to the steps. Like, if you work them steps hardcore, everything else in your life is just going to kind of fall into place, you know, and it's true.
Absolutely. When I am connected spiritually, then the ups and downs of the day, the challenges of the day, the obstacles of the day, the things that would normally erode my serenity.
I love it. Erode.
Yes. My serenity.
I get it.
don't. They don't. They bounce off. Right?
Yep.
But when I am not connected, when other things are getting in the way of that spiritual connection, to Peter's point, then everything's at risk.
It gets chaotic, don't it?
Yes.
And quick.
Yes.
For me, anyway.
And I start getting real edgy. Real quick.
Yep.
You know?
Restless, irritable, and discontent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, we got another call coming up, and this is gal.
Okay.
I want Peter
His name's Troy.
I want Troy. I have Peter on the brain. I have Peter on the brain. Troy, I want you to respond to this one. This is our last guest co-host, Jordan. Oh. So Jordan called in.
Jordan, you rock.
Hey, what's going on, Charlie, Jason, Way Out Podcast? This is Jordan from Coon Rapids, Minnesota.
What?
I'm calling on today's topic, emotional sobriety. So, for me, like, emotional sobriety is managing emotions in some way other than drinking over them. It's more about coping with events and feelings in rational, mature ways. It is about not having those feelings at all. It's about balance. Bill W. said, if we examine every disservice we have, great or small, we will find at the root of it some unhealthy dependency and inconsequent unhealthy demand. For Bill W., emotional sobriety meant not depending on circumstances, things, or the opinion of others to bring him happiness. This is similar to a Buddhist teaching that our happiness and serenity depends on how we respond to desires, cravings, or circumstances in life. Emotional sobriety comes from our reaction, to be aware of our emotions and to be mindful. To develop new habits of being able to express those emotions appropriately, and we respond with compassion and kindness for ourselves and for others. So I really liked that. I have read some of this online, and I really liked what it had to say. You know, there's also when I'm upset or bothered by something, by people, places, or things, it's actually something going on with me, and I find that to be very true. Hope you guys have a great show. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Jordan.
Jordan, you rock. And we should have just cut to that right at the beginning.
Google food.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we didn't even need to have a podcast. We could have just played that.
Yeah.
Troy.
I did listen to your last podcast, believe it or not, and Jordan was on there, and she is infectious. I love Jordan. She's amazing.
She did a great job. She did a great job.
She did. She did. She really did. She brought up Buddhism, and I only know, I know very little, but I know this one lady who practices Buddhism, and she for whatever reason, we were sharing in a meeting, and she had brought up this point, and somehow related to Buddhism, but if 22 things happen to you in the course of a day, and 21 of them are good, the one that you generally focus on is that one that's bad.
And yes.
you know what I mean? So if to Bill W's point, you know, if you can learn to focus on the good things, because you had 21 of them to focus on, my God, right? You know, so yeah. if you can practice that.
Didn't you have something that you were gonna like read
on
the show?
With your reading.
Oh, sure.
So while you're
because
looking,
it was Bill
yeah,
W.
While
as
you're
well,
looking
right?
that up, and that you were talking about the back of the big book, so and about emotional sobriety. But while you're looking that up, Troy, to Jordan's point, one of the things that strikes at the very core of emotional sobriety is what Jordan just said. Okay. That if we examined every disturbance, great or small, we will find at the root of it some unhealthy dependence and in consequence unhealthy demand, okay, upon some person, place, or thing. We are dependent yeah. on other people, other places, other things, okay, to make sure that we're okay. Okay. And my emotional sobriety should not be dependent on that.
Right.
Okay. And I didn't derive enough satisfaction out of whatever it might be. You ready?
You know, maybe sure. that's where, because I've been wrestling with, you know, loneliness lately.
Mm.
Having been single for so long and whatnot, and I don't think it's so much for the sex, it's like for that connection, right? But anyway, maybe that's where that loneliness, like what it really is. Maybe it's really not even loneliness, it's like a dependency coming out or something.
You know, I can tell you that, you know, spending three plus years single
wow.
in recovery on purpose
right
is hard.
Is yeah, it's difficult. Yeah, it is. You're right.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, but it was necessary for me.
For sure.
In order to go through the journey I needed to go through in order to get right with myself and have something to give in a relationship.
That's why no matter how uncomfortable that feeling might be sometimes, you know, because it varies in intensity when it comes up. Sometimes it's really bad and I want to like, you know,
but a relationship,
but I don't,
but what I forget is every relationship I've been in, I felt lonely in it.
Oh, dude, that's interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
So relationships did not fill that loneliness. Just like alcohol didn't, just like sex didn't, just like porn didn't,
right?
It didn't fill it.
Hmm.
Ultimately, that emptiness was not about a relationship. It was about my connection with the God of my understanding.
Trying to fill it, God says, home.
Bingo.
I love it when you say the God of my understanding that I don't understand.
I have no.
Yeah. I love that.
Zero understanding of the God of my understanding, yet somehow, some way, that God changed me. Figure that out.
Right.
Mm. Anyhow, okay, so page 559 in Alcoholics Anonymous. We members of AA may never again have to deal with drinking, but we do have to deal with sobriety every day. How do we do it? By learning through practicing the 12 steps and through sharing at meetings how to cope with problems that we looked to booze to solve back in the drinking days. Pretty simplistic, but...
But this idea that we're looking for a new solution to the trials and tribulations, emotionally and otherwise, that life presents. We got another call coming up right
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
I'm a member of
Alcoholics
Anonymous. I'm calling from Minnesota.
Hey, Minnesota.
Hey, Troy. You know, to me, emotional sobriety is what the whole deal is about, you know? I mean, it's not about getting clean and sober. It's about getting clean and sober and having peace of mind in that and being able to live our life in a happy way, in a sound, sane way where we don't need to seek the same you know, heavily implied throughout all of AA, but there's not one thing that says don't drink, because it's not about not drinking, it's about staying stopped once we do stop. And how are we going to do that? Well, we need to do these steps and achieve emotional sobriety.
Yes.
In our lives, so that we can go on with our lives and be happy, joyous, and free. You know, that's God's plan for us, is to be happy, joyous, and free. That's the hand that we're dealt. You know, we got five things: be happy, joyous, and free. That's it. And if I don't have emotional sobriety, I'm not going to be happy and content, and I'm going to be restless, irritable, and discontent, and I'm going to need to go out and try and find some decent comfort. And if I can't find that in my emotional sobriety, I'm going to seek that outside, which is what I always did before coming to AA, which was drinking, using drugs. And yeah, so that's about all I got on emotional sobriety, I guess, because it's the whole deal. You know, if we go without emotional sobriety, we're going to be continuing to create havoc in our lives and those around us, and, you know, not have comfort, peace of mind, and, you know, a well-balanced life. Anyway, have a good show, and thanks for letting me talk.
Thanks, Anonymous.
Yeah. I like that. That was mysterious.
I was about to ask, like, what's this dude's name? And then I'm like, wait, he didn't say his name. But thank you, man. That was really good.
That was
anonymous.
And that's okay. Cool. You know, from my perspective, what he hit on was the, if I don't have a solution and I try to live sober, I'm going to run into the truth, okay? Which is, I can't do this on my own. Okay. Yep. I can't do this outside of a solution-based program. I will become restless, irritable, and discontented, and I will, when the right opportunity or the wrong opportunity presents itself, seek comfort.
When he said that, I was thinking of Southern Comfort.
Yeah, right? But that's what... But
so dumb.
When life becomes unmanageable, intolerable, when I can no longer be in my own skin.
Right.
Because that's what will happen. I will reach a point where I can no longer be in my own skin, in my own body, and in my own brain. They all become intolerable. And I will have to drink. I will have no other choice, because I can't stand one more second. Okay? And the solution to that is embodied in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, the 12 steps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's embodied in there.
It's good stuff.
All right. We got another one coming up. I think we know this guy.
Hello, Charlie and cohorts. Buddy C from Georgia.
Buddy.
Emotional sobriety. I have found that I get peace and joy from doing the will of God for my life. And that's as simple as me offering the moment and then doing the next right thing that I see you do. Making it about, you know, what can I do for you rather than what you can do for me. And submitting and learning to do step three and everything, you know, turning my will and my life over to the care of God. You know, it's not just this hard will, but it's my life. It's everything. And that's what, you know, the steps teach us. We learn to work the steps in every part of our life. And for me, keeping my head down and doing that work brings about peace and joy. And that's what I'm looking for. So I just have to do the work. So that's my comment. But for me,
buddy, thank you so much.
He
got cut off, but he was wrapping up anyway, so we got all the good stuff.
Yes, which is sir. Amazing.
Buddy, thank you so much for calling in. Instructive in that is action. Troy, you said it earlier. I have to act my way into right thinking.
Mm.
and right feeling.
And I need somebody to direct me on what those actions are.
Boom. And so doing the will of the God of my understanding, who I don't have an understanding of,
yep,
allows me to then do that next right thing, right?
It's good stuff.
Yes. Buddy C always, I love the southern drawl, you know?
Oh, it buddy.
It just kind of puts me at ease. But it, I've heard him say submitting. You know, he is all about submitting to the God of his understanding. And that's paramount. That, you know, back callers ago, that was I think that was the gist of the call. But you almost have that southern drawl thing going on there.
You know, it's interesting because I was born and raised in Minnesota. Okay? But I've got I've been told, Jason, as you know, that I have a very distinctive accent.
Yeah. That was good stuff.
Yeah.
Jason, it's disarming.
Every time
I love it.
Every time we talk about that interaction, Jason giggles.
Yeah, it was funny. It was a Facebook thing, Facebook thread, and I just was like, oh my God, I gotta tag him in a comment so that he could see what was going on, because this lady this lady thought she was just talking to like another listener, and she was talking to one of the hosts, and she's That's like right. Oh, I thought he did the show by himself. I only listened once or twice, and she must have listened to one of the older episodes before we started this format.
Yep.
And so I told her, no, it's me, Charles, and Alex Nelson. And since she was like, oh, man, I got myself in hot water. It was awesome.
It's good. But what I liked about what Buddy said was this, like you said, submit, surrender. If I surrender all of it to the God of my understanding, my experience has been that I am relieved to some extent or another through that process. So if there's a bunch of negative emotion, I can surrender that if I choose. That's an action to the God of my understanding. In the process of that, brings me relief and comfort.
So funny too, because I totally agree that this is a thing, a tool that we can use. But when I first started in recovery, Coon Rapids Alano has all those old, like, they look like they're from the late 60s, early 70s pictures. You know, the think, and the easy
and,
does
and they
it.
Are, by
and,
the way.
And one says, give it to God. And oh my God, I'd be like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, what does
give
that
it mean? To God? What the hell does that mean? And I was like, it's stupid. And I, you know what I mean? And like, now I know what it means. Like, yeah. It has a deep personal meaning to me, as do all of those sayings that were on the walls that would, you know, get an equal response out of me of irritation and discomfort, because I was like, bullshit, this doesn't work, you can't,
you're not the only one. The first time I ever sat in a circle, they went around and I said keep on trucking. You know, easy does it, keep on trucking. I don't know, I needed a lot of help.
Yep. We did. We needed a lot of guidance in the beginning. Here's another guy that needs just a ton of guidance. Just okay. All sorts of just, I mean, just guidance he needs.
This is Christopher Lee Paul.
Oh. United States of
America. United States. I got a book for you. 12 smart things to do when the booze and drugs are gone, by Alan Berger.
Ooh.
Burgers. I'm hungry.
I say that because this power topic could be controversial, which, by the way, is the opposite of emotional sobriety. I love you guys for the antonyms.
Love you too, brother.
Yeah.
To me, emotional sobriety is not attained, and it cannot be attained. It's something you have to work on daily, if not several times a day. It's emotional balance, serenity, tranquility, acceptance, surrender, maturity. And it's especially humility. You cannot learn this shit from a book. You have to live it. I could not have emotional sobriety without God's help. God's got this. You got to have that God's got this attitude. Don't let shit bother you. The opposite, or antonym, emotional dependency. Emotional dependency is depending on other people's reactions to your feelings. Just because I feel weak doesn't mean I'm a weak person. Be aware and mindful of your emotions. Feel your feelings, but don't judge yourself from your emotions. Emotional sobriety is learning to deal with life on life's terms. That's why recovery is a way of life.
Yes.
Keep it up, guys.
You're the man.
Nice. He came to us with a book recommendation.
Boom.
He threw some serious, serious recovery. I mean, that deserves. He was on fire.
Put another log on the fire.
But he didn't hang up on us, so he's obviously still. We're in it. Help! We're in your pocket. Help! Hey. Help! Help! We're in your pocket. Help! We're in your pocket. Oh, good. We're not in his pocket anymore. That was.
I think the 3-minute thing ran out.
That was awkward.
Yeah. Windy. He must have been up on a skyscraper cocking windows or something.
12 smart things to do when the booze and drugs are gone by Alan Berger. So there's a great book recommendation. I'm going to be looking that up. I love that.
Yes. Okay? And I'm going to be getting a burger after as well.
Oh, my gosh. Just as long as it's not a direct response to a negative emotion, Jason.
Oh, right on. No. Yeah,
because that would not be that dude's an last name made sober. Me hungry. Yeah, that would not be an emotionally sober behavior.
No, sir.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you. I cannot thank you enough. This was amazing. I loved it.
It was good to have you on, Troy, and you were an integral part of our recovery power topic, emotional sobriety.
Power topic.
I feel like it.
Be good, everybody.
<I'm kidding. laughs> Peace.
Thank you for being a part of The Way Out, where we share stories from people just like you who have recovered from alcoholism and other addictions. If you would like to reach out to the show, you can visit us on the web at wayoutcast.com. That's wayoutcast, all one word, .com. Or drop your host a friendly email at share@wayoutcast.com. There you can also find links to previous episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podcast Garden. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the podcast, contact me at share@wayoutcast.com. See you next time. And remember, if you don't change, your sobriety day will.
Intro, recovery revealed, and outro music courtesy of Ben Sound Music.